Welcome to a new edition of the Neon Jazz Interview Series with Chicago-based jazz arranger, composer, saxophonist, drummer, model, and activist Isaiah Collier. In the waning days of 2021, we caught up with him about his life in jazz, the arts, and his new 2021 CD with the chosen few called Cosmic Transitions. The CD was inspired by his fascination with the planet Mercury that is a five-part, 56-minute suite of contemplative arrangements and aggressive free jazz. He grew up on the south side of Chicago, surrounded by music, and is an alumnus of the Jazz Institute of Chicago. Dig his passion and story.
Hey, thanks for taking a minute out for Neon Jazz on a quick notice here. I appreciate it.
Yeah, man, absolutely.
So, Cosmic Transitions, it's such a majestic album. It's almost like a couple of novels in one. Talk to me a little bit about this project and, you know, kind of with everything that's been going on here on planet Earth for like the last year and a half or so, what does this album mean to you in that context as well?
Yeah, I guess that's exactly, more or less exactly what the title says, is Cosmic Transitions. But, you know, in the sense of everything that even did happen last year, it was a build-up to it. And whether we see it as a random virus or so, I don't personally. I don't believe in no such thing as coincidence nor randomness. Everything happens for a reason. And even as I was composing these suites, everything that had came out of it was me pouring the lessons that I had a chance to reflect on during specific seasons of the years, specifically during the time of retrograde, specifically from the planet Mercury, which is the planet of communication, which ironically has three retrogrades annually, and those taking place in June, October, and February. And they've been the most tedious of times for me to communicate with people. Some of the most simplest conversations can be taken and made into misunderstandings. Not only that, but in certain moral situations come into place as well. And so then how do we deal with the adversity of certain lessons, or at least with the human experience? You know, we are susceptible to a lot of variety of emotions, but through those emotions, how do we calm down and speed through them as the lessons at the base of all those things? I mean, and those lessons manifested themselves in the five movements, which would be known as the suite, from forgiveness to humility to understanding, truth and guidance, and then lastly, the reason for all these lessons was Mercury's retrograde. And, you know, in order to forgive, you have to release the tensions of emotions that you have. And through that, that means we also have to, and sometimes when we allow ourselves to fall into the emotion traps, we feel a little bit more humiliated because we didn't have the utmost form of self-control. But the only way you get humility is through that word, unfortunately, which is humiliation, and which is a beautiful thing, right? I mean, some people disagree, but then I would just say, live your experience, and you'll notice that these two, they're two sides of the coin, you know? And so once you realize what happened to you, you're more than likely to take up the position of, I don't want that to happen to anybody else. Hence is why we develop things like grace. And then that transferred over into me gaining understanding. But also with these lessons, all these five lessons and virtues came from five different people that I met. But slowly it would start showing me how to live a little bit more consciously, you know. I mean, and above, you know, my influences and everything, I had to come to the conclusion that these guys and ladies weren't just, they weren't just writing this stuff, you know. They were living this. So if we're not living in conjunction with our artistic expression, then what are we really creating?
Absolutely. Well, the other heavy thing about this project is it was recorded on Coltrane's birthday back in 2020, and it was a big influence for you as a Love Supreme. Talk to me a little bit about Coltrane and how he's influenced the way you approach art.
I would definitely say he was definitely the first saxophone player I definitely gravitated towards. My father, when I first started picking up the saxophone, he always told me there's two saxophonists you're going to have to deal with no matter what. and he said it was Charlie Parker and John Coltrane. And I remember my first time listening to Bird, I heard his infamous solo on A Night in Tunisia. You know, instantly I went, yeah, no. Yeah, no, I'm not, no. But in the recording he played of Coltrane, which is really interesting because the tempos weren't too far off, but I don't know, it's just weird sometimes when you hear something and you just go, that makes more sense to me, you know. And he played that one video with the quartet playing Impressions. And I don't know, for whatever reason, it made more sense to me to hear that versus all the stuff that Bird was playing. And so then I never quite forgot that. And then all the other, I went into a spiral trying to just listen to different artists. And honestly, a lot of people don't know, I tried my best to stay away from training for a long time. I really did. I tried to get into a thing, you know, figuring out what made a John Coltrane, who were the connecting factors of the end result of his sound, right? So getting into a Dexter Gordon thing, getting into a Sonny Stitt thing, dealing with Gene Ammons, you know, coming from Chicago, I have to have a totally different understanding of my own history of tenor saxophone playing, but then to find out he was strongly influenced by a lot of guys from Chicago. You know, his first recordings were with Gene Ammons, I remember this is Spring All-Star Group, and that's one of the rare recordings you hear him playing alto. Then on top of that, I forget the next record, but he did the record with Johnny Griffin, you know, and all I could hear was the components of how his sound was being influenced. And though he loved Dexter Gordon, right, Dexter Gordon was still in the same band as Gene Ammons, along with, like, Illinois Jacquet, I believe with Ekasine's group. And Dexter even was influenced by the way that Jug was playing. And so that poured over, and it still, you know, it connected everything. You know, then him meeting people like John Gilmore of Sun Ra's Orchestra, who also helped him conceptually get his approach together for the record that we would know and call Giant Steps. You know, so it was just weird to see how everything kept connecting. No matter how much I tried to run away from it, it kept coming back around. So I had to just say, okay, let me just deal with it. You know, and even though there was other people who I went through the whole entire slew of cats, man, from Mark Turner, Walter Smith III, got into some Warren Marsh, Joe Henderson, Wayne, Joshua Redman, James Carter. They all had a fulcrum coming back to the same cat. You know, even if you deal with Albert Ayler, the Pharoah Sanders, there's this link that you cannot separate from none of them. Until, you know, just had to submit. And I mean, as much as I, you know, started being influenced by Train, I really started getting more and more and deeper into one of my favorite people now. And I'm fortunate enough to even study with him, is Roscoe Mitchell. Opened up a whole different portal. It just helped me see that it's a philosophy within the music, you know. There is really no difference. And once you can get to a point where you can see that, you know, that conversation is always present. Even when it was in bebop, you know, I can hear Bird a little bit more clearly now because of this, my journey with it at least.
Well, there's so many influences and names you threw out there that were influential in your development and the way that you got into jazz. But what was the first live show that you saw that blew you away? What musician did you witness?
The first live show. I think the first live show I heard was actually the first time I played with another saxophonist. It was here in Chicago. His name was Al Smith. And I remember why I was blown away was because I remember I had to be every bit of either 11 or 12. But this guy had literally played the Charlie Parker solo from A Night in Tunisia. So it was throwing me off because I was like, oh, this is the song I said I don't want no problems or no pizza at all. And just to finally hear somebody who said, oh, you worried about that? Check this out. It was just like, whoa. You know, I was in awe. I was on stage with the guy just looking like, huh? And but then after him, I had to solo after that. And I remember playing and my mind went blank. You know, everybody else remembers what you did, but I have no recollection of what I did. And that was inspiring because it's like, and sometimes, rarely, I have those times where I'm just playing and I don't remember, which is I find to be really cool because then it lets me know I found a gold mine in a sense. You know, it's the real realm of true improvisation. Sometimes when we think we're improvising, we're really not. Sometimes it's just really just spontaneous composition and all the principles of music theory that we possess at us. But when we get to a threshold where we finally tap into the ether in a place that has never been charted before, that's when I know that, that's when I also know that my actual voice is coming through, you know, because there's no place of reference for what's coming out. There is no way to really correlate it exactly by notes, but you can connect it by feeling. And when I feel myself going into that, that's just those are the moments I live for, and that's why I can definitely say that John Coltrane inspired me. You know, this never ending feeling of exploration. You know, and every time that they went on, it felt like they were trying to figure out, how do I go beyond what I just did the night before? And that's kind of a mantra that stuck with me. Even a lot of my mentors here are the same way. He's like, no, man, I don't want to hear the same thing you played. I don't want to hear nothing you worked on. I want to hear where are we going now? And I've been able to slowly adopt that philosophy with my group. And you know, the more we play together, or I won't even say play, because I actually don't like that term. The more we make music together, the more we get to go into that uncharted territory.
So you were born on the south side of Chicago, a very music-rich home. Was it always music for you? Was it always going to be that your life was going to be as a musician?
No. Ironically, I was the last person to pick up an instrument. I actually didn't really want to do it. but I guess I kind of just started finding my own way into it. I used to take piano lessons when I was younger, but I did that for a bit, and then I stopped. My mom was a choir director at my church, and so she enrolled all of us in the choir, the youth choir, to start singing and stuff. Did that for a bit, too, and then stopped. And then one summer, my mom had found this flyer that had literally blew in her face from the wind, and they had a music program going on the south side at this place called the Salvation Army, right off 69th and Morgan. And yeah, they put us in. And my actual reason for playing saxophone was actually pretty funny. I didn't know I wanted to play saxophone, and the only reason why I picked it was because my mother had bought my brother a saxophone from a pawn shop. Well, actually, the thrift store she actually got it from. He was playing a Bundy Selmer. And I remember when I got to the program, they were like, okay, all the kids, pick your instrument you want to play so we can start. And I was just like, I don't know anything else, so I just went with the sax. And no one could have told me that this would have happened like this. No one could have told me. And I guess I always looked up to my older brother as well, though. My brother started really being able to pick up on it, and as I got older, I found out the dude had perfect pitch. I was like, okay, so you already had an unfair advantage before I even got here. Good to know. Good to know. But, you know, seeing how he was getting a chance to go up in the ranks was like, okay, whoa, 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 whoa. I can't be the only person that's getting left behind. So that ignited a fire under me, you know, to push myself and be myself at the highest level without comparison. And ironically, that did happen, because I remember my first instrument was the alto saxophone, and my band instructor said, okay, he can't play alto. And they were like, what do you mean, why? Because he's way too loud. And so they upgraded me to a tenor. And that's kind of how I got stuck on it, was from that. And it's been with me ever since.
And, you know, you're a model, you're an activist, you're multi-instrumentalist. Talk to me a little bit about how all of these come together for you. How do all of these work to feed off of each other to make you who you are as an artist?
Well, And that's why exactly what I said. I thought I would not be doing music because of those other components, right? Especially when it came to activism, I didn't really get that deep into it until college, to be honest with you. That's because I had my first away home encounter with racism. Don't get me wrong, I wasn't ignorant to the fact that it exists and prejudice and bias was out there, but it's a different thing when the conflict meets you directly and nobody else around there looks like you and you're the only person that has to deal with it. And it ignited something in me because I also realized we're living in a time of ignorance and fear. And that's usually what these symptoms of racism is. And I think it's something that can be easily be cured if people just know. People say ignorant things because people don't know. And so what we can either yell, be mad at them for not knowing, or we can say, okay, I'll take the time to educate you. And the more I found a way to educate people, it evolved, you know, because at the end of the day, for the development, as all of us as human beings, no matter where you're at, you got to have some type of form of accountability. You got to. And I had to be accountable for myself, you know. I could have reacted in any other type of way, and that event could have resulted in me losing my career, losing my scholarships, had I reacted in another way, you know. And so that was even another lesson in self-control. So a lot of these things that happen, they're tests, you know, from the universe or the Most High, however many people may see the supreme figure in the universe, or if they don't, just there is a force that keeps it all together. Once again, we have a choice. We do. And that just opens more, that opened my mind more. You know, I had to learn how to channel my energy more thoroughly, you know. And I'm still learning how to do it because it's levels, right? You never really master it. You know, you just find another way to keep going beyond and beyond and beyond. And then as far as, like, the modeling and stuff, I've always wanted to do it because my mother used to actually be a model as well. So I just, like, you know what, this is an interesting way to keep, you know, my thing was just like, stay working no matter what. Just if one thing's not going on, you got something else to do. And so I just hit some photographers I knew. I got with one of these casting companies before and just started putting it out there. I haven't been doing as much as late, but I definitely love getting the chance to just, you know, to participate in different mediums. And that's another thing too, I think, that helps with truly keeping people creative, is being in these different artistic realms and ethers. That's what challenges our perspective, and everything we thought we were doing that was quote-unquote right, we hear somebody else's take on it, we go, huh, I never considered that before. So now that's something that maybe I could try to adapt in my own personal approach and artistic expression and discipline, and help me expound it even more. I even look at composition differently. You know, hanging with certain people who can be actors, directors, culinary artists, visual artists, and to see how they are composing in their own ways, how that helps me reflect that, you know, in my music. You know, I'd like to sometimes think that the music are like, the songs are like characters, you know, and you got to play the role, or the I can't feel it. You know, people won't be able to receive it the way that you want them to.
You know, the one thing we've been talking about with a lot of these musicians is that, you know, where they're from really influences their sound. Like Bird, you know, living here in Kansas City and seeing how it rolls in the history. You know, the blues were definitely a part of what he did. Someone from New Orleans has the same kind of feeling. You know they're from New Orleans. Mm-hmm. As a musician from Chicago, what has Chicago provided to you that's indelibly a part of the voice that you put out there?
Don't you dare let up. That's it. The city produces nothing but natural born hustlers and a bunch of tenacious people. And if you try to deny them, well, they'll deny you by proving you wrong. I'm not the only person that's hailed from this city and had to show the world different. from the likes of, you know, people like Chaka Khan, the Bernie Macs, the Herbie Hancocks, you know. We can go on and list all day, you know, but definitely that ability to not let up just because somebody else thinks you can't or you shouldn't. We don't take that. We don't accept that word. And I remember, and I love this quote. It was from Wayne Shorter. And just like that, I think this also represents Chicago in a sense. But he says the word jazz to him means I dare you. And just like that, I think we dare you to say we can't do it. And watch us take that time to show you that we can.
You know, as you look back on your life, let's say you have a dream tonight. You run into your younger self around the time that you were becoming a professional. And you could give yourself, your younger self, one piece of advice based on what you've learned throughout all these years. And this isn't about regret. It's about taking that wisdom and using it. What would you tell your younger self?
I would tell my younger self, prioritize. Maintain your priorities. That's the only way things come together, to be honest with you. And my mother has always told me that as well. But as I've been getting older, that lesson has been making more sense and more sense. And the reason why is because if you lose sense of your priorities, you can't act upon your goals the way you want them to be thoroughly. You can't, because it has to be a step one to make it to a step two, to a step three, to a step four. And just like that, she always told me, your first priority should be your relationship with the Most High. And then secondly, with your family, then everything else. If you don't have those bases, you know, and even if we take away the religious or spiritual context, it's mostly saying you got to have a relationship with yourself first and foremost, right? Then your interaction with your family shows you how you'll be able to interact with people in the world. If you can't communicate with the people in your own house, best believe you're going to have a hard time doing it in the actual world. Then once you have that, then everything else kind of falls into place. Because everything else is just an inversion of those first two principles.
I meant to ask this up front when we were talking about cosmic transitions, but I'm curious, what are you hoping the listener gets from this experience? I mean, it's definitely an experience you have to take in holistically, but what are you hoping they feel from this?
I'm hoping that they feel and also know that we are capable of what the previous generation left behind. And it isn't something that is just exclusive to a specific time and space. At the end of the day, all I can say is when I heard John Coltrane, them do their stuff, and what really just been driving me home is they were people who were living through the most intense times in history, civically, emotionally, racially, and all the other different aspects of it. And the question was, how am I going to respond, you know? Because when we look at stuff, what we have today, a lot of the stuff back then did not exist. There was not a lot of therapy for people who were still dealing with a lot of trauma. So it was more shock therapy than it was practical therapy. There weren't a lot of black psychiatrists you could go to, and if none at that. So mental health was always being replaced with prescriptions versus having a chance to really decompress all these different things. And yet these guys managed to compartmentalize all of their emotions and convictions into the form of sound. You know, we are still living in those similar times. And with that, that means that fire that still burned is still existing in the music. I also want people to know that jazz isn't dead, but what it has done and what it is doing is it's evolving, just like everything else must. And this is the modern evolution of it. And we dare to go beyond that.
So everyone has a perception of you, your family, your friends, your fans, but ultimately you live your life. You have a perception of yourself. Who do you think you are?
A person's trying to figure it out. And I'm not going to stop. I mean, that's it. If I were to just say I'm just this, then I'll be that. But I'm just another being having a human experience.
Beautiful, man. Isaiah, thank you for taking a minute out for me on Jazz. Good luck with everything as we move forward.
Thank you, Joe, man. Appreciate you.
Thanks for listening and tuning in to another Neon Jazz interview, where we give you a bit of insight into the finest players in Chicago, Kansas City, and spots all over the world giving fans all that jazz. Thanks to Isaiah for his cool time and story. If you want to hear more interviews, go to Famous Interviews with Joe Domino in the iTunes Store. Visit NeonJazz at YouTube.com, and for everything Neon Jazz all the time, go to the NeonJazz.blogspot.com. Until next time, enjoy the jazz, my friends.
Neon Jazz.